The following program may contain material that is unsuitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Aftermath Radio should not be considered a substitute for services provided by a licensed mental health professional. Good afternoon and welcome to Aftermath Radio, brought to you live from the K-Beach radio station at Cal State Long Beach.
All right. Wheels up. We're running Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Cal State Long Beach. This is Aftermath Radio. Yes, we are back. It's fall 2012. Making some changes, so we've got some new things going on. I have some new producers helping me out today, who I'm going to introduce in a minute. And actually, we have Gigi Barr still here, but she's silently sort of in the background sulking and here to rescue us if anything should happen. If you'd like to speak to us, call us at area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. You can email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. And as always, we encourage you to check out our website at aftermathradio.org. Click on the radio link in the lower left-hand corner. And all of our previous podcasts from long, long ago are there for you to listen to at your leisure. So first thing I want to do is say hi to some new faces around here, and we have my new graduate student producers. We have Danielle Slakoff.
Hello.
Very good. How'd that feel?
Amazing.
Amazing. And we have Paulette Iriarte.
Hello.
All right. And Paulette and Danielle are taking over Chantel and Gigi's gig, because Chantel is now in Phoenix doing her PhD, and Gigi is still here, but she's on her way out. We're headed for law school, right? Very good. Okay, so today, very excited, we have up on the show Dr. Dave Kossin and Dr. Paul Babiak actually coming on today to talk about the Aftermath Surviving Psychopathy Foundation, a little bit about the foundation itself. A lot of people don't know that this radio show was originally formed sort of out of that foundation that is set up to help survivors of individuals in psychopathic relationships, and that's where the name Aftermath Radio comes from. So without stealing too much of their thunder, they're going to talk about that today. And it's always good to hear from those two. Those two are heavyweights, and you guys will learn as we go that they always deliver. Even when we're having a bad day, they always come through. So like maybe even today. Yeah. All right. And I realized kind of going through getting the show prepped up for the semester, which is not something we spend a lot of time doing this semester, but I thought at least for today, take a little bit of time to reintroduce the show, because I haven't done this in probably a couple years in terms of letting everyone know why we're here, what this is all about, and letting you know sort of who I am. I mean, everyone's been kind of blindly following the show for some time, and maybe you have questions about who is this guy on the radio. So in terms of me, I'm an assistant professor at a state university in California. I'm not a talk show host. At least I don't identify as one. I play the role of one on TV, I guess, as they say. But I'm a professor that's got a talk show. I'm not a journalist. I have no training in journalism. I'm not a licensed mental health professional, although I do have my learner's permit, which means I can practice psychology as long as there's a licensed practitioner in the car with me. And that's a joke. Thank you for laughing, by the way. You guys are like, really? All right. So what am I? I'm a research psychologist. I have a PhD in psychology from the University of Southern California. I studied under a very brilliant research scientist named Adrian Raine. Got my PhD in 2009. I've received training in the assessment of psychopathy from some of the leading researchers in the field. I've interviewed myself dozens of psychopaths and psychopathic individuals both in and out of prison. As a university professor, I teach courses in criminology. I get to talk a lot about psychopaths in my courses. I've taught in both psychology departments and criminal justice departments. I've authored several published articles and book chapters on psychopathy and schizophrenia, mental illness, and crime. So my background, you know, scholarly background is in this area as well as clinically too. And so basically I'm just, you know, I'm your basic professional educator paid by the state of California with a microphone to talk to you guys all over the world. So that's me. And the show, Aftermath Radio, like I said, it has its foundations in the Aftermath Surviving Psychopathy Foundation, which was set up to help survivors of relationships with psychopathic individuals. We originally, 2 years ago, sort of conceived this as, or conceptualized it rather, as like an ongoing conversation about psychopathy, really to sort of educate and inform and about the topic of psychopaths, what they are, what they look like, what do you do when you have one in your life. And also as a forum to listen, and it's very important to us here at Aftermath Radio to be able to provide a voice, literally a voice for survivors of psychopathy so they can be heard. I don't consider the show a source, but rather a resource, meaning we sort of take beneficial information and redistribute it. We don't profess to be sort of sources of any information here. In fact, we kind of pride ourselves on going out and getting the really smart people to come on the show and talk to you all. We don't profess to have the answers, but we profess to be able to find them for you and to make them accessible for you. So whether or not we're talking about, you know, research, whether we're talking about, you know, issues related to dealing with a psychopathic individual in the legal system, perhaps at work, at your employment, this sort of thing manifests in many different areas of life, and we kind of like to sort of have our finger on the pulse of all of those and just really, like I said, to get people talking about psychopathy, and that's why we're here. And it is an ongoing, evolving thing. I don't think we've done the same thing really from semester to semester yet. I think that's part of the appeal to the show is that it's constantly changing, at least in terms of content. And now it's got a brand new look. We've got two new producers who will meet after the commercial break, and they're going to tell us all about themselves and all the great things they have planned for the show. So we're looking forward to that, right? And additionally as well, we find ourselves being able to be, you know, not only on the air for an hour every week, but sort of available when we're not on the air, at least in terms of being able to leave voicemails with us and send us emails, and certainly pointing listeners toward the forum, which Dr. Koss and Dr. Babek will be talking about later on the hour. You know, I sort of see us as kind of a beacon, at least, you know, calling attention to the foundation, but the foundation and the forum and all the resources there are really where we like to send people that need help. And we've done a pretty good job at that. We do have listeners from all over the world. And encourage folks to write in, to call in. And originally I conceptualized this as more of like a Dr. Laura interactive talk thing where people call and we answer questions. I don't know that it's quite gotten to that point yet. We've come pretty close, but we certainly encourage folks to call when we're on the air and then to listen to the podcast when we're off the air. So we're like the 7-Eleven of psychopathy information dissemination, aren't we?
Sure. Yeah.
I just straight made that up on the spot. Okay, you know, I actually burned through everything that I had for this first segment. It's good to be back. Got a bunch of good stuff come up later in the show. And certainly later in the season, a lot of exciting people, some familiar faces, and some new ones as well. So we're really excited to be back. And the Twitter and the Facebooking. We're going to get that up and running. Probably not today so much. No, she's shaking her. You can talk. They can't see you shaking your head.
You're mute.
I envision us like tweeting and Facebooking as the show is going down and then maybe even during the week as well. So we'll see if that happens. Yeah?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. So that was the first segment in the can. What do you think?
Was awesome.
All right.
Mind-blowing.
Would you give it an A?
B minus.
B minus?
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Aftermath Radio. We will be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Aftermath Radio.
All right, we're back. Aftermath Radio, Dr. Robert Shug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. If you'd like to reach us, please do call us at area code 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. Now, I wanted to give our new producers a chance to introduce themselves and kind of let us know what's going on in their life and why they're here and why they would even think of taking something like this on. So, Danielle, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Do you have anything prepared, like a prepared speech, or shall I prompt
No,
you
I'm
for
completely
information?
Winging it, actually.
Okay, so you are, what degree program are you in, first of all?
I am a second year master's student here in the Criminal Justice Department.
Okay, and so you've been here a year already?
Yes, I have. Actually, this is my sixth year because I graduated here with my undergraduate degree.
That's right, which was in what?
Journalism.
And why did you make the switch from journalism, and I found an interesting switch, from journalism to criminal justice?
I always say it as journalism was my first love, but criminal justice is my true love or my soulmate.
Oh, that's sweet.
So basically, I realized in journalism that I was focusing on criminal justice in all of my assignments. So I realized that it was the crime and the criminal justice that was more interesting to me than the writing. So I made the switch.
Excellent. So what is left for you in terms of to get out of this university with a degree? What have you done and what do you need to do to graduate?
I am currently writing a thesis on the intersection of media and crime, specifically on missing women.
Okay, that sounds fascinating. What have you found?
Well, it's pretty obvious, but basically that the media is obsessed with white women, and that they're, even though white women are statistically far less likely to go missing, they're the ones that get all the media attention. Think Natalie Holloway, J.C. Dugard, Elizabeth Smart. Those are the people that you tend to think of when you think of missing women.
Right.
But statistically, they're far less likely to go missing.
So why is it then that the media focuses on Caucasian women then?
There's a lot of reasons, but mostly the people who make the news are generally white. That's one main one. Also, there's just a sex appeal component to it, what sexy sells.
Interesting. Okay. And so how did you walk me through your thesis then? Like, what sort of data did you collect?
So basically, I collected 2,100 articles from the major newspapers in this country.
Now, 2,100 is not that many.
No, it isn't.
You think you're sort of like cutting corners?
No, it's over a, it's over a two-year period.
I'm just kidding, by the way. That's a lot of articles. All right. Why 2,100? That's insane.
That actually was just the number that came up over a two-year period.
That's just what was available?
Right.
Okay. Okay, so 2,100 articles.
Yes. And then I had to sort through every sixth article to make it a random sample and pick out certain components of the story that make it interesting. So race is a big one, obviously, that I'm focusing on.
Gotcha.
Also, what their job is. People that are white-collar tend to get more attention in the media. And there's other components too, age.
So is this a content analysis?
It is. Okay. It is a content analysis.
I see. Okay, cool. And what do you feel you bring to, this isn't a job interview, but it kind of sounds like one. So what
it
do you feel,
does.
What strengths do you feel you bring to Aftermath Radio? Because we are in dire need of strengths.
I think my strength, honestly, self-deprecating humor here. I think my strength is obviously in journalism and bringing that component, something that I kind of let go when I decided to go on to criminal justice.
Right.
And it was very appealing to me to be able to use some of my journalism background in this environment.
So it's, don't think we put words in your mouth, but it's sort of like finding maybe a reminder of your lost love and
exactly.
Like cherishing it.
No, don't psychoanalyze me, but no. Yeah. Just
all
kidding.
Right. Very good. So we are definitely looking forward. Now, I noticed that you have a high level of energy and organization that certainly we're looking forward to, you know, helping the show through its less organized and less energetic moments. So that's good.
Absolutely. And obviously the content is so interesting. That's also a huge part of it.
Good. Okay. So Paulette.
Yes.
What's your deal?
What do you mean, what's my deal?
Okay, so you're,
well, I'm also a second year graduate student in the Masters of Criminal Justice program.
Mm-hmm. And so, like Danielle, you are now working on your thesis.
Yes,
and I know
am.
This because I'm chairing it.
Of course.
Did you want to tell everyone a little bit about that? Because I find it fascinating.
Yes. So we're basically looking at psychopathy and serial killers and looking if more specifically, if serial killers exhibit psychopathic traits through language, specifically through written letters, because there's been a lot of, well, more studies on their verbal language, so just on focusing on like speech patterns and whatnot. So this is us trying to focus more on written work, which I think is more difficult than to capture certain things, like than it is on written.
Yeah, and originally we had the idea of writing letters to serial killers in prisons, which I thought was a really cool idea. But then our department chair kind of made us wise to how practical that might have
been.
There
was a lot more concerns on that end.
Yeah, so that's, but that's still in the works. We still want to make that happen. Yeah. But you found a source that literally, a published source of letters to serial killers from this author.
Yes.
And so what have you been doing with that?
Well, the book is The Serial Killer Letters by Jennifer Furio.
That's a plug for the book, all right?
No, just so, you know, just so people know. Mm-hmm. And basically, I'm just dissecting. There's going to be four letters, for example. So four letters for each serial killer, right. And I'm focusing on 12. So looking at the content, it's a content analysis, mm-hmm. of the letters and seeing if they display certain psychopathic traits. For example, like emotional distancing, seeing if they tend to focus on the past tense, material needs, and also if they display like motivational driven behavior, mm-hmm. just through their expressions, like what they say.
Right.
So yeah, just kind of focusing on that.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I mean, you're both using content analysis, so it involves computer software and mm-hmm. looking at lots of words and looking for themes.
Yes.
Right. So what do you bring to the table, Paulette?
As far as this?
Yeah.
Well, I...
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just... I mean, I have no experience whatsoever, but...
Well, that's just great, isn't it?
No, listen. I'm willing to learn. Given the tools, I am more than, you know...
But you do have a genuine interest in psychopathy. I do know that about you.
Yes, I do. Yeah, definitely. I guess that's what... more than anything interested me to want to get involved in this, because this is an area that's I've been really interested in. And honestly, it was one of the primary reasons why I came to this program. I think even in as corny as it sounds, but I do remember specifically even making a reference to you in my personal statement, because you were you're the person of expertise in this school.
Uh-huh.
So, that was one of the primary reasons.
They come from around the world, right?
Or Southern California.
Right up the road, right? Either
right.
or. Just let me have my little delusion of grandeur here, right? Okay, so back to you, Danielle, then. And thank you, Paulette.
No problem.
What have you noticed in terms of your friends or your family or people around you? How would you rate their knowledge of psychopathy? I mean, just from the conversations you've had.
Well, everything comes from the media. So I think when people think of psychopaths, most of them think of Dexter. Mm-hmm. That's one that comes up a lot when I bring up psychopaths. And then also in terms of a real psychopath, Ted Bundy tends to come up a lot because he is the poster child. Mm-hmm. But I would say by and large, those are the two things that people think of when they think of a psychopath.
Okay, so sort of a limited knowledge base and really kind of...
And they're very similar, if you think about it. I don't know a lot.
I mean, I've certainly watched Dexter before, and I'm a fan of the show. I don't get a chance to see it. But is he based on, and in any way, on the Ted Bundy character? Because I think that would be sort of a natural Hollywood scriptwriter tendency to.
I don't think so, but there's a lot of similarities there. Uh-huh. I would say, just being good looking, being charming,
right?
So.
Now, that Gigi Brar and I have our picture taken next to Ted Bundy's Volkswagen Beetle. Remember that?
Yeah. That is creepy.
Did we ever post that? No. It's in the Museum of Crime and Punishment. Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
In Washington, D.C.? Yeah.
That's
so,
awesome.
It's I don't know what to say. I guess it is. For us, it's awesome. You know, it's interesting. It certainly is interesting. Have you been there before?
No.
Yeah, it's really, it's moving, I think, is a good word for it, too. But, okay, so limited to what they see on TV, limited to sort of pop cultural references. Does anyone that you know from what you can see, are they either in a relationship or have they been in a relationship with someone who you think might be psychopathic?
Absolutely.
Really? Okay. Someone close to you?
Yeah, it's a family member, but they're no longer together. But I would say that it happened in the past, yeah.
Okay. And was it frustrating for you as the family member watching it happen?
I think not so much for me because I was so young, but somebody older than me in my family, like my mom, for example, mm-hmm. I think it definitely affected her more.
Yeah, I imagine so. And then Paulette, what's your sense of the people that you generally hang out with? Do they understand psychopathy, do you think, legitimately? Or what's their kind of frame of reference?
Honestly, I would say probably not. I think it's kind of they just – I feel like I'm more of the one telling them just because of what I'm studying and what my interest is in. But I think it's kind of the same. It's based on what's out there in the media. Actually, I don't know if you guys have saw it, but there's like a movie called Seven Psychopaths coming out.
Yes, we were just talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw
so
the
I
promo
think that's,
yesterday.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like Colin Farrell and all
right.
those people. So, yeah, I just – it's funny that someone actually, one of my friends brought that to my attention and I was like, yeah, it's coming out, but yeah. I'm not sure how accurate at all that based was, on.
Well, the trailer that I saw, there was already a couple of inaccuracies I saw portrayed. And I whenever these things come out, I sort of get excited and then I kind of get frustrated. Because one of the things we talk about in the show is how the word psychopath has become this kind of buzzword. It's very, I mean, I hate to say this and some people might not agree with me, but it is kind of this sexy word that people like to throw around, especially in the media. And I feel that the media are very irresponsible in terms of using it appropriately. And so I sort of see us actually this semester kind of looking at that movie a little closer and maybe doing kind of a bid on it and see how I hope that they consulted with some experts and kind of did a really good job. Looks like
close.
The acting, the cast looks pretty strong, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see. I'm optimistic, but I'm sort of prepared to be disappointed. So yeah. Okay. Any other closing thoughts that you wanted to get to that I didn't get to? Daniel or Paulette?
No, I think one other thing is that a lot of my friends are surprised when I tell them that the first thing I learned in my journalism class my freshman year was when it bleeds, it leads. And that is what we were told day one of our journalism courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are usually a little shocked to hear that that's what sells and that's what newspapers want to write about because that's what interests people.
Right.
So I think that's something that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely a documented phenomenon. And, you know, I don't know that necessarily the in terms of relating it to psychopathy, like stories on psychopaths don't seem to surface, I think, as stories on psychopaths. But one thing that we like to do here is look through the news and see what sort of stories are representing individuals that might be psychopathic. Like, for example, we were talking about who today? Do you remember?
Drew Peterson.
Yeah, Drew Peterson.
Drew
right?
Peterson.
Yeah. And how he seems to show traits of psychopathy, you know,
right.
But we're not calling him a psychopath, certainly, but these individuals come up in the media all the time and looking at it through a different lens, looking at them as potential psychopathic individuals might help in kind of an understanding of what's going on, you know, particularly in these areas where these people do these horrific things to each other and no one seems to know why. You know, we had a couple of very high profile violent crimes happen over the summer and earlier in the year. And I think the media's inclination is to say, oh, yeah, that person's a psychopath, you know. But I think when you look closely at it, I don't know that I'm too sure. Anyway,
right.
Coming up after the break, we're going to have Dr. Dave Costin and Dr. Paul Babiak coming on talking about the Aftermath Surviving Psychopathy Foundation. I guess we'll be right back. And I'm gonna play the legitimate music right here. You ready? Okay, here we go.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Aftermath Radio, we are back. If you'd like to speak with us, please call us at area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. If you'd like to Skype us, we're at Aftermath aftermathradio. You can email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. And as always, we encourage you to visit the website, aftermathradio.org, and click on the radio button in the lower left-hand corner. And so, is everything good over there? You guys are like all, there's like a flurry of activity happening on that side. No, we're all good? Thumbs
good.
Up?
Great, okay. Thumbs up.
Now, we have on the line, I hope we have on the line, Dr. Dave Costin and Dr. Paul Babiak. Are you gentlemen there?
We are.
Excellent.
We are.
Very good. Now, this was the one technical achievement I wanted to accomplish today, and it happened, and Danielle is taking credit for it. Very good. Okay. Welcome. Let me do some introductions here. First, we have Dr. Dave Costin, professor of psychology at Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science. He is one of the co-authors of the Psychopathy Checklist Youth Version and has authored over 50 articles on psychopathy. His research focuses primarily on the cognitive, emotional, and interpersonal mechanisms underlying psychopathy. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks.
And then we have Dr. Paul Babiak, an industrial and organizational psychologist in private practice in New York. Dr. Babiak coaches and consults to executives and organizations on leadership development issues. He is the author with Robert Hare of the book Snakes in Suits, When Psychopaths Go to Work. He has also authored several scientific papers and book chapters and speaks about the corporate psychopath to audiences around the world. Welcome, Dr. Babiak.
Good to be here.
It's good to have you here, and it's been probably over 6 months, right?
Oh, at least, yes.
And so have you gentlemen enjoyed your time off?
I have.
Yes, I've been very far away.
Just relaxing. Right. Okay. And so I think the theme to today's show is sort of introductions or reintroductions, as it were. And we kind of wanted to get folks the opportunity to become reacquainted with the Aftermath Surviving Psychopathy Foundation and talk a little bit about what the foundation has been doing in the past year, because it has been doing a lot of great things. And I for one, admit that I haven't necessarily been able to be highlighting them on the show as much as I should be. So, Dave, can you, I guess, remind our listeners a little bit about what the organization is and its mission?
Yeah, of course. So the foundation was formed to try to help people who are in traumatic relationships with psychopathic individuals. And, you know, we do a number of things related to that overarching goal. We try to educate professionals to help them deal more effectively with psychopathic individuals. We try to generally increase awareness and understanding of the negative impact of psychopathy. And we try to help victims and survivors to recover from these kind of traumatic relationships, you know, partly by getting resource material together and partly, in some cases, by making referrals to professionals who understand psychopathy.
And Paul, did you want to add anything to that, or...?
Well, I think a couple of things. Earlier, you had referred to the general knowledge of people you meet, family members, is limited when it comes to psychopathy to what they see on TV, pop cultural references, you stated. And I think that's so true, that there's so much misinformation out there and lack of real good, solid scientific information. And a major part of what the foundation does is to gather that information, package it in a way that is readily accessible to the public, and then communicate it through our website as well as through other programs.
You know, we're still a pretty young foundation. I guess that's the one of the main things to convey to people. And as we become more organized and as more people have, you know, joined us to help with us, we've tried to increase the infrastructure in the group, and one of the steps towards growing as a group is to put our mission on the website, and more recently to put the strategic plan, well, I guess you could say to develop some intermediate term plans and put them out there for people so that they can evaluate what we're doing and give us constructive criticism or support based on their reaction. So it's just been there, I think, for maybe 6 months or so that we've had it up there. It's a plan for the next couple of years, and I would certainly encourage listeners to take a look at the website and see what they think about it. But it relates to the same kind of general goals that I already mentioned to you. And I think if we start talking more specifically about some of the work we've done in the areas of education and work with professionals, as well as helping individuals, I think we'll get to a lot of the specifics.
Right. That sounds great. And before we continue, just to get this out there, if you go to www.aftermathradio.org, that does take you to the foundation homepage. So folks can go there, straight there. And then the other resources, including the radio program, are listed there. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about helping professionals deal more effectively with psychopathic individuals in terms of education and training. And there's a lot of exciting work that you guys have done, I think, in this past year.
I guess it was maybe a year or two ago, we put together a workshop for mental health professionals on psychopathy. And it was several hours long. And during those sessions, and Dave can talk to the specifics because he was one of the presenters, it was held at the Florida Psychological Association for quite a large group of mental health professionals. And it covered everything from what is psychopathy to how do you provide consulting and therapeutic services to a victim of psychopathy who might be sitting in front of you in your office. And that was the first of our programs, and it was very well received, I'd say, Dave. You got a lot of positive feedback on that.
We did. We got some good ratings. You know, I guess what I would want to add about it is that it's related to what you guys were talking about before Paul and I joined you. Psychopathy's in the news a lot. It's probably too much in the news, and it's too much in the mainstream media with television and film. But so often what's portrayed is not accurate that professionals frequently don't really understand it. And to my chagrin, even psychologists often don't really understand psychopathy because they're only exposed to antisocial personality disorder, which is in the DSM, something we've talked about on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
So the result is we sometimes hear terrible stories about people who go to psychotherapists for help, and the therapists are simply manipulated by someone, who is charming and doesn't really have much regard for the truth. And we've discovered that just because people have a master's or a PhD in psychology doesn't mean they really know how to help somebody who's in a relationship with someone with these features.
Right, and that was going to be my next question, is why would we need to educate psychologists about psychopathy? You would think that they would be the experts, and all the reasons you just articulated are those reasons. Are there any other groups that we've been reaching out to?
Yeah, one important one is the judicial system, family court judges in particular, attorneys, mediators, people like that who deal with families who are in turmoil, trauma, you might say, as a result possibly of a psychopath. And because, as we all know, because of a psychopath's ability to con and manipulate and charm, very often it's the judge and attorney in the case that's really left out in the cold. They really do not see what's actually going on in the dynamics in the family. And so part of what we've done, and this was in Chicago, a program run for family court judges, the AFCC. That was in 2012, and I think we have another one coming up in California in 2013.
Well, that was the that was the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts, which is a sort of a national organization for family court staff, and yes, they only gave us an hour and a half, in contrast to the Florida group that gave us the opportunity to present for 6 hours.
Right.
So we weren't able to get into as much detail as we would like, but again, the presentation was very well received. We got a lot of compliments and some requests for more time, and so we have submitted a request, or I guess an application, for a longer workshop at the 2013 meeting of the AFCC, and that's the one Paul just mentioned that's coming up in California. We don't know if they'll have us back, but at least the reviews were good.
Right. And Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole, former FBI criminal profiler, presented with you at that.
Yes, Mary Ellen O'Toole was there, and Jill Ricca, who was also with me in Florida.
Right.
And has worked on all these workshops. Of course, we had help from both of you on writing these, even though you weren't present.
I was there in spirit. And I'm going to take your place when it comes to Los Angeles, right?
Is that what?
Oh, you didn't get that memo. All right, we're coming up on a commercial, but really, really quickly before we do, anything else in terms of education that we have coming up in the works?
I want to put in a plug for one more workshop that's on the books right now. A workshop has been organized for the clergy and religious leaders, which is going to be in the town of St. Catharines. I believe it's near Toronto in Canada this January, this coming January. So that's, again, another issue that has been discussed a little bit on the show, that sometimes people with psychopathic traits can be very effective at manipulating within religious organizations where people tend to be pretty trusting, particularly when people speak the language and they seem, to care about the same issues.
Right.
And so that's been another problem that we're trying to help with.
Yeah, and Dr. Rickey has actually come on and talked about psychopathy in the ministry. I think that's been fascinating to hear about that as well. We got to go to commercial. Can you two gentlemen stay for another segment?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. We'll be right back here on Aftermath Radio.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Cal State Long Beach. This is Aftermath Radio. You can reach us at 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio at kbeach.com. You see, you don't do this for 6 months, and it just becomes garbled in your mouth. See that? And you know the other stuff. Okay, we have online on the phone Dr. Dave Kosten, Professor of Psychology at Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science, and Dr. Paul Babiak, Industrial and Organizational Psychologist, private practice in New York. We are talking about the Aftermath Surviving Psychopathy Foundation. We've been talking a little bit about how the foundation has been involved in education of professionals. So I guess, what about increasing awareness and understanding of the impact of psychopathy for, say, survivors?
Well, we have a couple of things, a couple of mechanisms, mostly through our website. We have our forums, in which people who visit and sign up anonymously, of course, can read posts by individuals, often much like themselves, who are in similar situations, family situations, perhaps a spouse is a psychopath, perhaps even one of their children or grandparents, people like that, as well as business psychopaths that are sometimes mentioned in these forums. And what we find is that a number of people come in and they tell their stories, and then others in the community, and we tend to have a global community as we look at the hits that we get to the website and where these hits come from. They're all around the globe. We find, and I think our members find, that the problem is similar across all cultures. So that's very comforting to a lot of people. We also have some more focused bits of information in the form of FAQs, a new one that was just put up, and these are written by people either on our executive committee, on our board, or other experts that we contact. The most recent is entitled "What Traits Are Associated with Psychopathy," and it's a nicely encapsulated bit of information that somebody can easily digest. And it really helps to spread awareness and the understanding of what psychopathy is in neat little nuggets, if you will.
Right.
Another one is affinity fraud, which I know you had the show with Dr. Rickey, but there's also an FAQ on that. Other things that we do is we read books, and often recommended by posters, and we read them. At least one or two of us reads them, and if we feel it's good, we add it to our list of books that we recommend to the public. So we do things like that to try to get information out.
Right, and we're approached all the time by people who want us to sort of get behind or maybe even endorse books or other kind of products, and we do very carefully look at beforehand before we put our name or stamp our approval on anything.
Oh, absolutely, and that's also true with various websites that are out there. As you know, on the Internet, there's a lot of junk, and if somebody suggests that we put a link up on our site, and we do have links, we very carefully go through the link and make sure that it's legitimate information.
Right, right. And then, okay, so I do want to protect some time at the end of the interview to talk about how folks can get involved or help, but Dave, just in a couple of minutes, in terms of what we've done this year, can you sort of sum it up?
Well, apart from what we've already mentioned, I'll just mention a few things. People do not have to be members of the foundation to get help. Our mission is to help everybody who needs help. But this year we've made some big strides in terms of the membership, and so a number of people have joined. We wanted to make it sort of easy for people to support us with just a small donation to join, because a lot of people don't have much money. But one of the things that we are doing is we're kind of trying to expand the role of members in the group, and so we've had so far one online chat with our members, and we're considering doing another one. We're sort of actually putting out some feelers to see if this is something that the members found useful. We're hoping that the members, you know, will be giving us ideas for what works well, what doesn't work well, and also things they'd like to become more involved with in terms of making the group more effective. One of the things we're a little bit excited about is that with a lot of help from Dr. Leanne Leadham, we selected some membership pins which have our logo on them, and just in the past, I think, 2 weeks, we began sending out the membership pins to all our members. So again, not that people should feel pressure, but if they want to, they can wear this, and it's a way of letting people know that they support this cause. Another big thing that we've been working on is developing a membership page, and there's a members-only forum, so it gives people who are members a chance to, to contribute their input and communicate with other members. Paul was talking a little bit about the website, and one of the things that I was excited to see in our last report on the website was that there were about 15,500 visits to the website in the past 3-month period. So, on the one hand, we try to help people with the forums, but we're also we know we're reaching a lot more people, you know, around the world than just through the forums.
Sure. Some people might be more inclined to stay on the sidelines and observe.
That's right.
And that's okay, too.
It is true that it's more of the English-speaking countries where we're reaching people than the than just everywhere in the world. But I noticed that in the last website report, there's kind of been an increase in several European countries in the number of people tuning in to the website. One of the things we're working on now, we haven't pulled this off yet, is trying to translate some of the website pages into other languages. So that's something that I hope we can unveil in the next year.
Okay. Well, we're running short of time. There's so much to talk about. We really haven't even hit on research and how we're referrals for folks who come to us for help. But I did want to protect some time here. Just a couple minutes left. What can people do if they want to get help or to get involved?
Okay, well, so there are lots of things people can do. The first thing is we encourage them to check out the website, see what they think, give us feedback. We want people to come to the forums. This is not only a chance to get help, as Paul was talking about before, by asking questions about situations in their lives, and I can't overemphasize how important this can be for people who feel sometimes isolated or alienated from friends. sometimes they're, you know, someone in their life may have told lies about them, which caused them to lose some of their social support networks. But this is a way that, that they can actually find that they're not entirely alone. There are some people out there who can understand what they're going through. But then in addition to that, you know, just helping others sometimes makes people feel better in spite of maybe the tragedy someone's lived through. They can still give back in a direct way. In addition, people can join the group as members and, again, give us more direct input, become more involved. We have people who contact us because they want to volunteer with the group. And this is especially for people who are really no longer dealing with traumatic relationships, you know, on a daily basis. When people feel that they've got their lives back, at least to a large degree, and they have the energy. We're not asking for, you know, this is nothing like a quid pro quo. We're not asking people to do something for the group, but people sometimes say to us they want to, now that they understand the issues and they feel strongly about it and they're doing all right, so they want to help us. And then, of course, if people want to contribute financially, that's how we've been able to do some of the things we've done, including, for example, recently hiring an administrative assistant, which helps us to do a better job finding referrals for people, giving out grants to people who are doing research in this area. And so we also very much appreciate that. The last thing I want to say about this is that in terms of our developing our infrastructure, we've signed up with this organization called GuideStar, which rates and evaluates nonprofit organizations. And so that's another place people can learn about us and check us out, is by looking at us on GuideStar.
Right. Okay, a few seconds left. Paul, anything you want to throw in there? Or?
I think Dave said it all very well, and I guess I want to thank you, Robert, for you know, having us on the show and for actually doing the show. You referred to it as the 7-Eleven of psychopathy dissemination.
Right.
No, I think you're a little higher class operation than that. It's a pleasure working with you, all of us.
I really do appreciate that, especially coming from you. Okay, great. So we'll be hearing from both of you either separately or together at various points throughout the semester. We always look forward to that. And want to thank you so much for coming on with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Okay. Speak to you guys later. Bye-bye. All right. So there they go, Dr. Babiak and Dr. Kossin. Really quickly, next week we have a woman by the name of Caroline Sutherland who's written a book called Direct Hit: How Facebook Destroyed My Marriage and How I Healed. So that should promise to be a fascinating, fascinating interview. In the meantime, if you'd like to get a hold of us, you can always call us at 562-912-3541. Leave a voicemail, Skype us at aftermath.radio, same thing, or email us with questions, comments, what have you, at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. So what do you think? Danielle and Paulette, first show in the can. How'd it go?
Amazing.
Good.
Amazing. All right.
Better than expected.
We'll be right back here, same time, next week. Aftermath Radio here on K-Beach.
You've been listening to Aftermath Radio, production of the K-Beach radio station at California State University, Long Beach. Produced in association with AftermathSurvivingPsychopathy.org. Your host has been Dr. Robert Shug. Your producers have been Brian Frederick, Chantel Fahmy, and Gurjeet Brar. Join us next Monday at 4 p.m. for another exciting episode. If you or someone you know has been victimized and you'd like to talk to someone, call the Cal State Long Beach Counseling and Psychological Services number at 562-985-4001. Aftermath Radio.